This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is Lynn and Kelvin on the Evening Edition, and to fully get into the festive spirit of Raya, we have another special program for you today, which will be quite in line, I think, with how people have been planning for the festive season, because today it's all about Baju Raya.
Baju Raya is special to me because it's something different from what we wear every day. Like, every day we will just wear t-shirt, jeans. It's boring.
You don't really wear Baju Raya every day, but when you do wear, like, Baju Kurung or Baju Melayu, you just feel the Malay culture.
It'll make you feel like a part of a family. Doesn't matter if you're Malay, Chinese, Indian, whatsoever, you are celebrating Hari Raya.
So we'll be exploring the whole ritual of buying Baju Raya, what goes into creating fashion collections, and also the history of traditional Malay attire.
To kick things off, our intern Ezrin spoke with several individuals about their preferences and practices surrounding Baju Raya. A couple of the folks she spoke to practice this custom, you may have seen it, where the entire family wears matching attire for the celebrations.
We will still wear the same color, but we just have a different styles.
For day one, we're wearing blue, and day two, we're wearing red.
Also, is it better to buy ready-to-wear or custom-make at the tailors?
We buy every year because the buying itself gives us that sense of occasion.
I rather choose to actually like buy the cloth and make it so that we have our own style rather than just buying it from stores.
If I'm going to spend like 200 something on a Baju Kurung, the Baju Kurung better fit me and better look nice. So customization is always the way to go.
When I see a Baju Raya that I like, I just get it.
Man, I am loving the spirit in that. It better fit me. And when it comes to design preferences, our respondents prioritize color and fabric patterns.
These days, I like to wear dresses. So I like the flowery, pretty dresses. So that's what I bought for this year.
Once I see something I like, maybe like I really love this pattern and I would just stick to it. I would not change my mind. I will stick to that cloth no matter what.
I guess for me, if the color pops, if the style looks nice and if the material is nice and comfortable, that's my go-to. Because like for me, one, the color says everything. I'm not someone who likes dull colors. I'm someone who likes bright colors.
We want to hear from you as well. What are the things that dictate how you purchase Baju Raya? You know, what are the considerations you make? Are you planning to match with your entire family? Have you color-coded? We just have all these questions. So talk to us about how it is that you've bought your Baju Raya for the year. You can call us and let us know, 77-332-900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we're going to be speaking with a fashion designer about the ins and outs of creating a Raya fashion collection that isn't only trendy, but also ethically conscious. So stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
It's the Evening Edition with Lynn and Kelvin. It is part two of our special Raya program. Today, it's all about the business of Raya fashion. So earlier, we heard from some fashion enthusiasts about what their preferences were when it came to selecting their Raya wardrobe. And we also wanted to get the perspective of someone who actually hustles to get those collections out every year. So to do that, we're crossing over to Shazana Sukiman, the co-founder of Whimsical. Shazana, firstly, thanks for joining us on the show.
Thanks so much for having me on the show.
So, why do you think the ritual of buying Baju Raya is an important one for those who are celebrating Raya?
I think it's called a ritual for a reason. We grew up with it, and also because we perform all sorts of deed. We fasted during Ramadan. It was a 30 days. We performed Taraweeh, so it's a month where we give back. So it's so meaningful. So when we actually end it, we end it well. I think that's why we choose it as a way to commemorate the month. by dressing up, by cooking, by spending time with our loved ones. I think that's why it's so meaningful.
What do you think people look for when they go on their annual hunt for the perfect raya getup?
I think that varies because everybody's different. Everybody's got different tastes. They've got different lifestyle. They've got different personalities, which is what I got from the very beginning when we started the brand. I know a lot of people like to look really dressed up because it's such a special day. They wanted to look extra, I would say. But personally for me, I've always looked for practicality because if I were to spend money on something, I need to make sure it brings value to me, that I can wear it often, I can still perform day-to-day thing, I can still run after my kids, I can still cook in the kitchen, I can still clean up. But also there are times that we have a particular occasion or particular house that we want to visit to, particular kenduri or event that we want to go to that we want to dress up. So I guess you choose your getup based on your occasion and where you are, I would say. Yeah, but like for me personally, that I would look for something that's much more practical and comfortable, but I still need to look cute, but it has to be practical.
And when it comes to this market for raya fashion, how much have you seen it evolve over the years?
Quite substantial, I would say, because I remember growing up, and even for the longest time, we've always had all our raya get-ups custom-made because we wanted to have the same theme, we wanted to have a certain look, and you can't really choose anything, I would say, within the theme for the whole family in one place. So we will have them all custom made. But over the years, people knew that having custom made baju raya isn't very economical and it takes time to get it done. So, and we live in a time where people want things fast, they want things quick and also affordable. So I think that's why I think there's a gap there, and it's a good thing that a lot of designers pick that up. So, which is why from what we see in the market, there's a lot of options for raya fashion.
Right. And we've now got online platforms that are able to offer massive selections of raya options. And there are so many designers competing for the customer's attention. What do you make of this huge e-commerce boom?
I believe it's human nature. As consumers, we always want to look for options, the options that speaks to us, that suits our needs. So, which is why you can see there's so many options in the market right now. And for e-commerce platforms, it's growing so fast because we want something quick and something convenient that we can just view and browse at the touch of a button from our phones or from our laptops. So it saves us a lot of time. But the thing with e-commerce and clothing is just the tricky part is to just make sure that when you actually sell something, when consumers actually receive their goods, it's actually what they see and they get what they're paying for. But it's I think it's improving a lot these days. So I think it's not going to slow down anytime soon. But on our side, what we say is because we're selling clothing based on practicality, and we do our best to educate consumers also, because I know with so many options in the market, you always spot for choices. I know people are forcing to sell things right now because, of course, you want to make the sale. But I've always been honest with our customers. I would say that if you have trouble choosing, just sleep on it first. Think about why you're buying something. Do you really need it? Does it serve a purpose? Does it fit you well? If it does, come back and shop from us.
And in terms of competition, how much has this proliferation of online platforms and designers actually affected you?
In terms of competition, I believe the industry is more of like an ecosystem. Everybody has different sets of skills and strength. And just like consumers, we all have different tastes and personalities that we gravitate towards certain design, we gravitate towards certain designers, or towards a certain brand. So you, like, as consumer, we don't just buy from one brand. Like, if, like, with skincare or beauty products, even with clothing, you don't just buy from one brand. So when we first launched our women's wear, it was born out of need, because we don't see anything practical for women that, I mean, that serves things that are simple but well made. We always say that we're try to design and produce pieces that eventually become your old favorites. You know, there's like trendy clothing that's super elaborate, and there are clothing that you always go back to in the closet. You know, like the ones that you feel good, you turn to time again, and they last for years. So that's what we're building. So we're not trying to compete with how elaborate our designs can be and how intricate they can be. So we try to compete with how much value we can offer our customers. Like the pieces that you can take it apart and you can wear it with your existing wardrobe. And yeah, so that's how we try to offer in terms of value to our customers, not just how comfortable they can be with themselves, but also financially. So when they buy something, they know you get this piece, but paperware per clothing with Whimsy Girl is way cheaper, because you'll find yourself wearing the clothing over and over again because you feel so good in it.
Looking at designing for the season, how much does it cost to produce a collection for Raya? How much do you prioritize that in your yearly planning?
I believe that is because we are an e-commerce brand first, that we have all the data, because we launched Whimsy Girl as a women's wear brand about 3 Raya seasons ago, that we have the data that shows that our customer spending pattern, who are our return customers, and we have our basket size per purchase. So based on all that numbers, we know exactly how much to produce every season. And we've also learned that about 50% of our annual production cost goes into our Raya collection. So that's how we plan ahead of time, because we are so mindful about our production, because we do not want to overproduce. We do not want to have this excessive amount of stocks that goes unsold, that we have to sell it out and get rid of it through sales. That's not what we want, because we really want to encourage customers by spending mindfully and get what you need, and because these are the pieces that will live with you for years to come.
Which I guess leads us to our next question. You run on the basis of creating clothes that can be reworn, and that tends to go pretty directly against the ethos of both fast fashion as well as special occasion clothing, where you repeating seems to be some sort of cardinal sin. How does that impact the way you put out a seasonal collection?
This is something we often say. Whimsy Girl is a solution-first company, and we do it through clothing. We would ask ourselves, whenever we design anything or whenever we even think about producing anything, we would ask, does it serve a single function or does it serve multi-functions? Because we don't want to come out with something that you can wear it once or wear it twice and after that you just forget about it. No, we don't want that. We make sure whatever we design, first, does it suit the climate? Does it suit your body shape? Would it take you through pregnancy, through nursing? Can you wear it to work? Can you wear it to special occasion? So when we design the Raya clothing, we say, if you're a teacher, can you wear it on weekends? You feel comfortable with yourself that, you know what, I want to wear baju kurung today. And with the pieces that we design, we treat it more of like a system, you know, like a modular that you can take it apart, mix and match it with anything from the collection or wear it with anything that you own.
Was the issue of fashion waste something that you considered? How did that influence your production?
I had this big aha moment a few years ago, long before we even started our women's wear brand. We have too much stuff, and I think people consume just too much of things and buy things that they don't even need just for the sake of, like, you know what, I want to wear it to this event, I want to wear it to that event. And I think with fast fashion as well, they make it so easy for you to buy anything, because it's like, oh, it's so cheap, let's just buy, doesn't matter. So few years ago, when I look at my closet, oh my gosh, why do I have so much clothes? I don't even wear most of this stuff. So I had like this massive purge of my closet, and I narrowed down to, I don't know, just one reel of clothes that I would say like, these are all that I wear. Why do I even bother having all these other clothes? And I end up donating most of the stuff. And from then on, I made sure that, you know what? We have to be very responsible. Even so, when we introduce a women's wear brand, we introduce our collection, that we say that, you know what? We have to be responsible. We have to also educate and inform everybody. We will say that, you know what? Buy what you need. So when we produce something, we ask ourselves, like, is it necessary to produce these things? Would girls need this? Would it help them in any way? If it does, then we would produce them. So that's why if you were to see our design, there's nothing complicated with the design. So first, we have to make sure that it serves multiple needs. And secondly, we have to know exactly how much to produce. Because we are not big on discounts. We do not discount anything. We don't discount on quality, and we don't discount on pricing. Because when people put a certain thought into what they buy, they value it more, as opposed to buying something that's so cheap that you don't really value the things that you buy, that you can just, like, you know, discard it whenever you want. So yeah, it's something that we really, really consider when we actually produce, because people just waste too much stuff and buy things that they don't need. So we don't want that.
Is there a need for the Raya fashion industry to evolve, and what would you like to see happen?
This is something that I always emphasize on. We have to be mindful about longevity of our clothing. So we really, really do our best to make sure that anything that we send out will bring sense of value to you. So the clothes last a really long time. Because we don't want something that you can wear once or twice and after that it doesn't work, that you end up wasting your money and you end up throwing it out. So that's not very kind to our mother planet either. So I would say, I hope people are more conscious about where their clothes are made, what is it made of, and the workmanship and the quality of the clothes, because longevity is important. Because that's like, the longer lifespan of the clothes are, then the less that you have to waste.
Shazana, thank you for sharing your perspective with us. That was Shazana Sukiman, co-founder of the women's wear label Whimsigal, speaking to us about her process and ethos to designing a Raya collection. We're talking about Baju Raya today, and if you would like to share your stories of shopping for Baju Raya this season, or the priorities that you set in place in terms of what you're looking for, please let us know. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio.
Coming up next, we continue our conversation on Raya fashion, but this time we'll be doing a throwback to the origins of some of our well-known and well-loved traditional Raya attire.
Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to Lynn and Kelvin, and earlier on the show, we spoke with a designer about the evolution of the Raya fashion market and how designers are setting themselves apart in the midst of the huge array of choices available to consumers, because of course, this whole hour we are dedicating to understanding and really contextualizing, I suppose, Baju Raya, the designing of it, the shopping of it, and now the history of it.
Yep, specifically the origins of Malay traditional attire. And to do that, we are crossing over to Dr. Hanisa Hassan, Senior Lecturer in the Fashion and Textile Department at University Malaysia Kelantan. Hanisa, thanks for joining us. As we heard earlier, there are still people who prefer to custom make their baju, their raya clothes, but there's also a sizable group of people who prefer to just buy their baju raya. And you notice the huge variety being sold online, at shopping malls and so on. Do we know when the practice of buying baju raya started to take place in our raya celebrations?
Okay, first we have to understand the scenario of Malaysian women, especially because women has the most buying habit among others. Yeah, women before the 80s are commonly housewives, salaried based job among women is not common in rural areas. Traditionally, women sew their own clothes for Hari Raya. For example, a mom will sew their clothes for their children. Therefore, buying clothes is not so common during that era. Only after about late 70s, the socioeconomic among the Malays had changed from being just a domestic housewife to a working class, mainly in public sectors. So at that time, custom-made tailoring is so popular that the market of ready-made baju raya is not so big as today. Only in the mid-80s, Malay women are commonly working, whether in the public or private sectors, whereby they have less time to do tailor-made garments, so they turn into buying ready-made baju raya instead. So the demand of baju raya grows bigger and bigger until today.
And can you talk to us about the origins of the baju kurung and baju Melayu, which are considered to be staples when it comes to traditional Malay attire?
Okay, the origins is quite vague, because some say if I look at the shape of baju Melayu itself, it has similarities from the rope from China. Eh? If you look at the history, those days the sultan in Malacca got the official dress given to them from the China. So if you look at the traditional Chinese robes given by the empress to the Malacca ruler, the shape is almost similar to the baju kurung that we have today. But it's very big. And then I think eventually they also have influence from other countries, such as from the Middle East continents. Yeah. So they have a lot of influence, because it started somewhere in Malacca. And then it spreads out to other states as well. So when you look at the common shape of baju kurung or baju Melayu, it's always tube. It's always big. But the locals made it smaller to suit the shape of the person who wears them, you know. So some the main characteristic that you can see, that the tube consists of pesak, keke, and sleeves, and a top, and the long sarong.
What are pesak and keke?
Okay, if you look at the traditional baju kurung, okay, it consists of bodies. Pesak and keke is actually at the side of the baju kurung or baju Melayu, because we have to understand that the origin of baju kurung, it always has to be loose. So when they started weaving in Southeast Asian region, they use body loom. The body loom only produce fabric according to the body of the person who weaves them. You know, if let's say the waist is only 16 inches, then they only produce 16 inches of the width of the fabric. So they have to do extension on the side. So they have to put pesak and keke at the side so that it can fit the body of the wearer.
And when it comes to baju kurung and baju Melayu, were they always worn by everybody, whether we're talking about royalty and common folk? And what were the differences in how they dressed?
It's not always worn by commoners last time, you know, because the fashion trend for the Malays in the traditional era, we always start with the royalties from the palace. They are the source of trend of setting up a benchmark on how Malays should be appeared to be seen. Yeah. So at that time, only royalties and their circle can afford to have full set of clothing. So in the traditional Malay men can hardly have access to raw material. Therefore, they either wear sarong or basic plain trousers. Women just wear kamban. You know kamban, right? The top sarong to cover the chest down. They started to wear, like say, the complete set of baju kurung or baju Melayu always starts in the circle of the courts. That's why they have a special setting for let's say the sultan. They can wear a complete set for like similar colors, golden thread yarns, for example, songkit and so on. You know, for commoners, normally they always just wear plain colored clothing. So certain fabric is only can be worn by the royalties. For example, full pattern songkit or gold thread songkit or yellow colored songkit, they can only be worn by the royalties, not by the commoners.
Talk to us a bit more about songket, because when you think of traditional Malay attire, you also think of the songket and how the intricate design and shimmering quality just brings so much beauty to the clothes. What were the origins of the fabric?
Okay, the fabric weaving culture in Malaysia is considered new compared to our neighbouring countries such as India, China or Indonesia, because they, like Indonesia itself, they started thousands of years ago. In Malaysia, for example, songket was introduced to us during the Melaka Sultan era by the traders from Palembang and Jambi. Songket is actually, yes, is always introduced as a gift to the ruler for the Sultan, for example. We only started weaving songket somewhere in the 17th century in Terengganu, whereby the Sultan at that time loved the fabric so much, which were presented to him from China. So he summoned his artisans to go to China and learn how to weave the fabric using gold, metallic, gold and silver yarn. Yeah. So after learning the techniques from the China, the artisan came back to Terengganu and started songket weaving. But they customized the designs according to the local motifs, or local taste and so on. So that's why in Malaysia, songket is very popular in the East Coast states of the peninsula.
And when did songket become something that not only members of royalty could wear, but commoners as well?
Because I think, from my opinion, last time, not many can afford to buy them. Like, say, as for example, I say the royalties has access to expensive material because it was actually a gift from the traders and people who met the sultan or the ruler. So at the very late, as you look at the social economic change in Malaysia, when people start working, they have money to buy their own fabric or their own clothes, whatever they like, you know, because songket is very expensive. It's not accessible to everyone. So only when Malaysia has changed into more developed nation and people start having their own money to buy whatever clothes they like, so then it become accessible to many. But still, until now, you have a limitation to certain colors or full motifs, like gold motifs on songket is not permitted to be worn in a certain occasion in the palace.
The evolution and way of dressing differs from state to state as well. How did these variances come to be?
The variation of state to state actually related to the activity of the people. For example, in the northern part, in Kedah, for example, the main activity among the Malays is cultivating rice. So if you look at Baju Kurung Kedah, okay, they have shorter sleeves and also shorter top, yeah, compared to other states. Other states, normally for Baju Kurung, they have quite a long length until up to the knee. Yeah. For Baju Kurung Kedah, they are always shorter. And they also wear it with batik sarong. Yeah. So this is because it makes the work easier for them to go and plant paddy fields, you know. So the sleeves is shorter compared to the other states. Then also the influence, for example, in Kedah or even in northern states, in Perlis or in Kelantan, they also have influence from Thai, whereby the use of fabric or the silhouette somehow does reflect those staying in the neighbouring countries such as Thailand.
And now every year, when you look at the variety of baju raya that we have in the market, what are the characteristics or traits that you first notice? And what do any changes or perhaps new design features, you know, what might those things say about Malay culture and lifestyle here?
Okay, during the years, the trend changed quite a bit, yeah. But the basic remains the same. For example, for Malays, they always wear a top and a long sarong or maybe a long skirt. But nowadays, you can also see people wearing jubah, you know, like abaya and galabia or some sort. They also wear like a blouse and maybe a skirt or pants. Yeah. Nowadays, if you look at the role of baju kurung, to me, it becomes a more prominent thing, you know, whereby it resembles the image of the Malay itself. But I love to see that baju kurung is not only portraying only for Malays, but it can also portray as nation itself, you know. Because if you look at Indonesia or you look at Philippines, they have their own traditional attire, whereby in Malaysia we have so many mix of cultures. Sometimes we can't even identify Malaysians when they go outside, you know. So I think, for example, baju kurung or baju Melayu should not only represent the Malays, but it also should represent the Malaysians in general.
Hanisa, thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Dr. Hanisa Hassan, Senior Lecturer in the Fashion and Textile Department at University Malaysia Kelantan.
If you missed any part of our show about Baju Raya, you can download the podcast on Spotify or on the BFM app.
You are listening to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.